Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm Catherine Eastman, Director of Archives at the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. And with me, as always, is my number one sidekick.
David Leopold, Creative Director.
You're my number one sidekick. Don't you think I'm your number one sidekick?
Yes, you definitely are my number one sidekick.
Thank you. Well, welcome back. We are here to talk today about a new online exhibition we have.
Yes, very exciting. This is I love doing digital exhibitions. And this one, Alan Pally, who did our great Noel Coward exhibition, approached us last year and said, it's going to be Julie Harris's centennial. I'd love to curate a show on her drawings in honor of Women's History Month. Mm. And I just thought that was a great idea.
That is a great idea.
And Julie Harris is another one of those performers. You can see their entire career through Hirschfeld drawings. There's 50 years of Hirschfeld drawings.
And how many drawings are there of Julie Harris?
There are 27 drawings.
Oh, I thought there were more. But yeah, almost all of them are of her. Like, very few full cast drawings or composites.
Almost all of her drawings, I think save for two, are from stage productions.
Wow.
I mean, in the second half of the 20th century, she was one of the greatest stage actresses of the American theater. And all of her important productions were drawn by Hirschfeld. Mm. And a couple of flops, too. But her work, if you want to see Julie Harris's career in the American theater, you only could see one group of things, the Hirschfeld drawings would give you more information than anything else.
Oh, sure. I would believe that. Definitely.
I never saw Julie Harris, which is, I now am kicking myself.
That is a shame. I would have put money that you had.
Yes. I met her, but I never saw her on stage.
Well, I feel like you could lead with, I met her.
No. It was not a significant meeting for either one of us. So it was at some event, and it was Julie Harris. I grew up in a world in which Julie Harris on stage was so common that, in a way, I guess I took it for granted.
Yeah.
I want to talk about some of my favorite drawings in the show. I want to hear about your favorite drawings in the show.
Love it.
One of mine is Belle of Amherst, because I grew up in a world in which that was an incredibly important show. You know, here was a woman, Emily Dickinson is now regarded as one of our most important American poets. But in the 70s, that reputation was really being sort of solidified.
Yeah.
And Julie Harris was just a known interpreter of Emily Dickinson. And when she did that show, it was amazing. And then it was filmed and shown on public television. My mother-in-law did the show. My mother-in-law was an actress and she did the show. Mm. So it was one of those shows that I always knew about. When we did our first online exhibition, Socially Distant Theater, of course I included that.
Yes.
And I included a link to the PBS broadcast, which is on YouTube. And I watched it because she's amazing. She brings to life 15 different characters. Mm. You know, this isn't like, oh, it was Emily Dickinson and her sister or something. There's men, there's women, there's descendants, there's all kinds of things. And she, without doing a lot of costume change, she brought these characters to life. And it was an early Friday drawing for Hirschfeld. But in a way, I think maybe it helped him understand what he could do in that spot, because it was just her head as Emily Dickinson, and it worked so well.
Yeah.
And I think it was like his third or fourth portrait.
Oh, wow. So this is
so it's really early. And I think it helped him to it seems to me it may have helped him to understand how to use that space.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense. And he did so often draw her in profile.
Yes.
Like, which is interesting. I mean, I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, you know, it worked.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not really profile. It's profile-like. It's almost three quarters out.
There's quite a few where it's literally profile.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking at one of mine that I have listed down. I am a camera.
Right.
Her and William Prince, and it is her profile. Like, even though there's lots of other things going on in the drawing, she is still completely in profile. And so it's just interesting that that's the way he always chose to draw her.
Definitely.
Well, I love this drawing because I love the sheer lace or kind of, I don't know if it's tulle or something she has on her dress.
Yes.
I just think it's so exquisite, and I love the way that looks. You know, I love the speckle effect that Herschel does. This isn't exactly that, but it does kind of give off that same feel.
Sure.
And so this is one of my favorites. It just, it looks so delicately drawn and very, I just love it. And I also, because I read the exhibition,
wow.
I did not know that this is a cabaret precursor.
Oh, yeah. No,
no she, idea.
She is so the first Sally Bowles. Something.
She is the first one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
So they adapted the Christopher Isherwood stories, the Berlin stories, into I Am a Camera. And you have to remember that the show that she was in, I think right before this, was Member of the Wedding, where she played a 12-year-old girl.
Wow.
At the age of 24, and everybody believed it. And now she's playing, I mean, Sally Bowles is not exactly a prim little girl. And everybody believed her in that. And in the exhibition, Alan has pointed out that when she went to do the audition for the director, you know, she did it and he was so dumbfounded by how good she was. He didn't know what to say, and she's doing it and they're talking and she was like, well, will you let me know if I get the part? And he's like, oh no, you're the only one for the part.
That's funny.
And it is hard when you think about Julie Harris. It's hard to think that Julie Harris and Liza Minnelli in some ways played the same role.
Yeah.
But very much that is the same character.
Yeah, not how I think of Julie Harris.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely not.
So after I Am a Camera, the next drawing is Mademoiselle Colombe, a 1954 production of a Jean-Henri play that came to Broadway. Again, Julie Harris amazed critics by her sensitive portrayal. Although she may not have been the biggest name in the show, she was considered the star in many ways because the program had a Richard Avedon photograph of Julie Harris on the cover. Now, it's funny because right around this time, 9-year-old Nina comes to her father and says, Dad, would you put my friend Liza's name in a drawing for her birthday? And Hirschfeld, being a good father, said, of course I would. And he must have been working on this drawing. And he hid the name Liza in, I won't tell you where it is.
I was about to cut you off.
Oh,
David.
My
like,
God.
David's going to tell everybody where this Liza is in the drawing?
Look, people should have to look for it. I looked for years.
Yep.
Because I knew the story because Hirschfeld puts Liza's name in the drawing. It appears in the paper. And all of a sudden, he starts receiving fruit baskets and flowers, congratulating him on the birth of his new child. Walter Winchell puts that the Hirschfelds are infantizing.
Oh, my gosh.
And
so we knew that he had put Liza in a drawing.
Right.
We just didn't know what drawing it was.
We knew that 1954 was the most likely time because we know that Nina is nine years old.
That makes sense.
And so I'd read the story over the years, and so I said, okay, I'm going to find the drawing. And I looked, and I looked, and I looked, and I could not find the drawing. And I thought, you know, maybe Hirschfeld told an apocryphal story.
Right.
You know, Maria Riva one time said, stories that should be true. And I had given up.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. And then Peter Wallach, Eli Wallach's son, had wanted to look at some drawings of his father, and Eli Wallach is in the Mademoiselle Colombe drawing. And so I brought it over to his house, and we were looking at a couple of different drawings, but Peter and I started talking about something else, and his son and his son's girlfriend were there, and they start looking at the drawings, and it turns out the girlfriend had never looked for a Nina before. And I explained to her how to find them and whatnot, and so Peter and I are talking, and the son and girlfriend are looking at the drawings. And she comes over to me. She said, you know, I have a question. And I said, what's that? She says, I found Nina's, but I also found Eliza. And I said, what do you mean you found Eliza? And she takes me over to this drawing. This is a woman who's never looked for a Nina in her life. And she finds the Liza in like 15 minutes. I was delighted, of course. I was super delighted because it was real.
And now you're like, I don't want to sell this drawing. Now we kind of want this one back.
Yeah. But
the price has gone up significantly.
I don't think I could say that to Peter at the time.
No, no, obviously.
We just added a zero to that one.
Yeah.
But I was just happy that we had found
it.
Yes. And and then as I was working on, as I was going over the material that Alan Pally had put together for the show, I realized that this play was translated by Louis Cronenberger, who was a theater critic, who was also at this time editing the Best Plays series. There is, in fact, in the books at that time, there was a self-portrait of Hirschfeld with Louis Cronenberg sitting in theater seats. And I now realized that in some ways, this was the perfect drawing for Hirschfeld to put Liza's name in, because Liza was Louis Cronenberg's 9-year-old daughter.
You know,
and she and Nina were great friends.
I see.
You know, their family
saw each
other. Of course,
he would put it in his show then.
I didn't put all that together. If I had done maybe more detective work,
you would have looked up the Louis Cronenberger shows in 1954.
That's why I do not do crime work as a profession.
Yeah, you'd be no good.
I had some clues. I didn't follow all the leads.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
And like I said, the show itself was not a big hit, but it's a great drawing. It's a backstage drawing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're on stage, but the stage is a backstage.
Yeah. And it's got Sam Jaffe.
Yeah, I knew you were going to love that.
Love it. Love Sam
Who was
Jaffe.
Probably the biggest star of
this
probably.
Group. Yeah, probably.
You know, because Eli Wallach is just really starting his career, too. You know, he and Julie Harris sort of came up around the same time. Mm. Edna Best was actually very well known. And what is amazing is Brooks Atkinson tears into her in the review, really criticizes her, says she's terrible.
Oh, no.
And maybe it's the reason why the show did not have a particularly long run. Mm. Alan was going to put some of that criticism of Edna Best in the show. And I said, not germane.
Yeah, let's leave that out of it.
But it's a fun drawing, and that it has that little extra sort of Nina quality just makes
it special. No, that makes it a very special drawing. Yeah. Well, speaking of Sam Jaffe, as we always do.
As one does.
As one does. My next drawing I picked is The Country Wife.
So what does that have to do with Sam Jaffe?
David, let me tell you what this has to do with Sam Jaffe.
Okay.
I like this drawing because it reminds me of her in East of Eden. Which, of course, is directed by Ilya Kazan. And I famously used to get Ilya Kazan and Sam Jaffe mixed up. It's a common mistake. You know, it's fine.
Only to you, it's a common mistake. Never accused. Nobody walked down the street and said, oh, I saw Ilya Kazan today. No, Sam Jaffe.
Well, no, Sam Jaffe. Darn it. So anyway, I picked The Country Wife from 1957 because it does remind me of her role in East of Eden. It's the whole look. It's very Abra from East of Eden. And that was all I knew about Julie Harris before I worked here, was that movie.
Right.
Which is funny because she's not a film star.
Right, no.
At all. Definitely a theater woman. So.
Although it is generally acknowledged that she helped James Dean really become James Dean on those films.
I would believe that.
Yeah.
Because they do have very good chemistry.
Right.
And she does, even in that, I mean, I don't know how old she is in 1957, or 1955, 54, but
she's under the age of 30.
Well, I know she's definitely under 30, but she reads very mature,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like that probably helped.
Right.
Helped everything. But I also just like this drawing. I do like all the Julie Harris drawings. She's always fun to look at, and the way he always does her eyes, it's either like just these two dots,
right.
or like... not hollowed out, but like always got the eye bones. I don't know. I don't want to say sunken because that sounds very derogatory, but she has very distinctive eyes to Hirschfeld, and he always draws her with those eyes, which I think is interesting.
It reminds me of the eyes that he draws on Dolly Haas.
Yeah, and they're always it gives a very childlike feel.
Right.
A very young feel to
right.
it.
And I think that is true. Julie Harris, even playing older women, and even when she became older, she still had this sort of almost childlike quality.
Yeah.
In a sort of innocence. And it wasn't that she didn't know what she was doing, but there was something pure about her.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, like you were saying, she played a 12-year-old, a member of the wedding, when she was 24. So she's just always, that just must be who she is.
Right.
You know.
Another famous role that was not drawn by Hirschfeld was The Lark, you know, where she plays Joan of Arc.
Oh.
Again, another.
That would be a great Hirschfeld drawing.
Yeah.
I bet.
One of those ones, like, why didn't he draw that one?
Yeah, that would have been good.
Recently, the Shaw Festival asked us for a drawing of Sleuth, which was a 1972 Peter Schaffer show made into a movie. And when I said Hirschfeld didn't draw it, they said, what do you mean? It was such a big production. It was a big hit. And I went and looked up and saw what the drawing was before and after it. And it's like, those were big shows at the time. And it showed, he drew.
There was other stuff going on. Yeah, he didn't get to that one.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's, can't draw them all. Really. As, he came close, but no, he did not draw everything.
Yeah, there are some misses. There's some big misses.
Well, I did talk about The Belle of Amherst, which was really one of my favorites. I wanted to point out that, and it's in the caption of the piece, but in addition to being nominated for a Tony for that show, she won a Grammy. For the, they recorded it. They made an album of just the her speaking the script, and it was a big hit, you know, in the world of spoken word records, and of course it did win the Grammy. And you should go definitely look at the caption of that particular piece, because in addition to talking about Julie Harris and The Belle of Amherst, we have a special extra part. It's a narrative by Ken Burns on working with Julie Harris. He met her when he was working on one of his very first documentaries. He wasn't even, he was a cameraman. He was like a, was like an assistant cameraman. It was really early in his career. And Julie Harris, it was actually about Emily Dickinson. This is like 1977. This is right after The Belle of Amherst. And she is hosting in this documentary, the short documentary on Emily Dickinson called A Slant of Light. And he's working with her on it. And, you know, during breaks, they have a conversation. And she says, you know, what are you doing when you're not doing this? And he says, well, I'm trying to make a documentary on the Brooklyn Bridge. And she says, oh, I'd love to be part of that. And Ken Burns thought that's just the kind of
just
thing people.
Nice.
Yeah, she was being nice. Yeah. And when the documentary was finished and they sort of had a wrap party, you know, people were saying goodbye to each other. And Julie Harris came over to him and said, "Don't forget about the Brooklyn Bridge." And of course, that's all young Ken Burns needed to hear. And so when
ma'am.
Yes, exactly. And so. When he's getting ready to make the film, he does contact her and asks her if she would be interested in reading the letters of Emily Roebling, who was the wife of the builder of the Brooklyn Bridge, and which she does do. And he said she was incredible because it's a voice performance is very different than a stage performance because it's all interior.
Yeah.
You know, you
can't
have to
show anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to do everything in your voice. And she was brilliant at it. So much so that the next one that he made, there was something and he reached out to her and she agreed. She was in almost every Ken Burns documentary.
That's wild.
And he would, and he said he was shameless about it. He had Julie Harris.
Yes.
So he would think of other voices that would be right and they were sometimes were stars. And he would contact the agent of this person and asked to do it. And they'd say, well, how much do you pay? And he had two choices, free or SAG minimum. And a lot of these agents would be like, no, thank you. And then he would say, but Julie Harris is working on it, you know. And they would be like, oh, if Julie Harris is working on it. You know, she was considered one of the great stage actresses. So their clients would end up doing it. So he used her to get other people. He felt bad about it and went to her and said, I'm so sorry I'm doing this. And her response is, use me.
Yeah.
Yeah, use me.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So he did a wonderful interview with Alan Doug Kunz, our media director and producer of this podcast, put together a great little 1-minute trailer for the exhibition, which is just Ken Burns talking about how wonderful Julie Harris is and looking at her drawings in the newspaper, her Hirschfeld drawings. So if you haven't seen that, you should see that. It's great. So that Belle of Amherst, I just wanted to add all that little extra part to it.
The other one I picked is Hamlet, of course, because you know how much I love Hamlet.
Sure.
And I do love this drawing. We recently photographed it. I forget what we photographed it for. And I know we posted it for the Taylor Swift album release, right? Because it has Ophelia in it. I had to tell Doug who Ophelia is. Couldn't believe it. But I guess people don't know. I guess not everybody loves Hamlet the way I do. So.
Look, you didn't know who Nina was.
That's different. I feel like that. Those are two very different
Should
levels.
Be taught in schools.
But anyway, I do love this drawing because it's got the classic Hamlet pose, of course. And you get Ophelia, which she is missing from almost every other Hamlet drawing, is she not?
This is the only.
Yeah, that's crazy that this is the only Hirschfeld representation of Ophelia.
Right.
And I would like to see Julie Harris do Shakespeare.
Oh,
that's
sure.
The other reason I picked it. I was like, I would watch that. That sounds good. I bet she was good at it.
Yeah.
And this is Shakespeare in the Park.
Yes. Well, what I love about this drawing is you
can
see the park,
the
skyline
in the background, which is great because it looks very funny, like, you know, next to everybody in there.
The Elsinore
costumes.
Castle.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how you can read it. That's right. That's just the castle in the background.
We did talk about this production of Hamlet in a podcast episode last year.
Was it titled 1964?
Yeah.
Well, it probably was it 2 years ago?
2 years ago. Yeah. Because it's a great story.
Yeah.
And Julie Harris didn't figure into that part of it. It was the Hamlet story.
Is that Alfred Drake?
No, Alfred.
Oh. I was close then. Alfred.
Ryder.
Oh. I was so close.
Yes. Yes, they're both actors, and they both are named
Alfred. That's very close.
Yeah, of course. That's
very close.
My last drawing is a little bit different. There are great drawings. I thought about Marathon 33 because I loved it. It's a story that Julie Harris encouraged June Havoc to write after reading her memoir about growing up. And if anybody's ever seen the film, They Shoot Horses, Don't They, with Jane Fonda, it seems very much of you know, it's this period in American culture where they would do these marathon dancing where, you know, they'd have to dance for 23 hours a day or something.
That's crazy. I was just talking about this yesterday with my husband.
No kidding.
Thons, yeah.
Yeah, no, they were really big in the Depression.
Just talking about that. Oh, interesting.
And
well, I think of Jerry Lewis, like telethons. It's the same idea, right? Like,
yeah, except this was pitting. These weren't celebrities. These were people who were dancing with each other, and it was who was the last person standing.
Was it for a fundraiser?
No, they were doing it to win a prize.
We should cut all this.
No, they did it for a prize.
Okay.
If you were the winner, you got the prize. And during the Depression, this was a way to make money.
I see.
You know, you and your boyfriend want to make some money. Maybe you want to get married and you want to make some money. So you go to a dance marathon.
That is wild.
And if you've never seen the film of They Shoot Horses,
no,
Don't They?
No.
Yeah, you should see that.
They should bring these things back. Dance-a-thons.
No, they shouldn't bring the Depression back either.
Well, too late, David. That's why I'm saying we should bring these back.
Well, we're going to make
a
move.
I will play for the love of the game, too.
Yeah.
You don't even have to pay me.
Well, most people who participated did not get paid because you could do it for days. I mean, they would do it for like
four
or 5 days.
Nonstop?
Almost nonstop.
That's crazy.
And in the drawing in the exhibition, you see them literally sort of almost sleeping on each other. They're just really, it's harrowing. The last piece that I wanted to talk about is Toast to the Town because unlike almost all these drawings, as you pointed out, which just has Julie Harris, this was a drawing done in 1997 of, it was a sort of end of the season drawing of the sort of great performances. you know, we don't have anything like this. This is really, in many ways, this is sort of the last gasp of Hirschfeld doing something composite. Where he a composite of different shows in a season. And I mean, there you have, and they're all at tables having cocktails, you know, it's the toast of the town.
It's very Academy Award nominee.
Yeah, levels. Very much yeah. like that. But I think it's interesting because right in the front table center is Julie Harris. Mm-hmm. She was in The Gin Game.
In profile, mind you.
Yeah. And right next to her is Christopher Plummer in Barrymore.
Classic.
Which was a one-person show that, oddly enough, was written by William Luce, who wrote Belle of Amherst.
Mm.
And was essentially known for writing one-person shows.
Interesting.
What I love about this drawing is it has so many great performers and performances from that season, even though in the article that accompanies this drawing, Ben Brantley complains about how lame the season was, except for these performances. But it is really an incredible group of performers. And then the last drawing he does of Julie Harris is of Julie Harris and Christopher Plummer. You know, he doesn't take them from this.
Yeah, it's not the same drawing, but they are kind. I mean, it's very, they're complementing each other, I guess.
Exactly.
In the drawing. It's
very exactly.
similar.
And Christopher Plummer and Julie Harris had worked together 30 years earlier.
Mm.
And of course, they knew each other. They were both theater people.
Yeah.
Both made movies and movies that we know. I mean, Christopher Plummer, of course,
definitely.
Sound of Music.
Yeah.
But when we think of Christopher Plummer, like when we think of Julie Harris, we think of the stage.
Mm.
And the Times got these two together to talk about, you know, working in the theater.
Mm.
And they had Hirschfeld do a drawing of the two of them seated in an empty theater.
So this is an illustration for that article.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Which doesn't always happen. That might seem, that's why I pointed out. Because most Hirschfeld drawings don't accompany an article.
Right. Right. Well, later in his career.
Later, much more often, yeah. But that's why I was clarifying.
And this is not they did not talk in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
They actually were talked in a hotel suite.
Mm.
Probably some ritzy hotel. But Hirschfeld positioned them in a theater because that's what they're talking about.
That's much more appropriate.
Yes, exactly. But it would be the last, he drew her 27 times, and I think he drew Christopher Plummer like 19 or 20 times.
Wow. So respectable numbers.
Yes. And again, almost all of those drawings of the two of them mm-hmm. are in stage productions.
Yeah.
Which really tells you a great deal about their careers. Mm. As much as we might know them from these one or two great
right.
movies that they did, it is their stage performances.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder the really memento we have of these performances are the Hirschfeld drawings
mm-hmm.
because they
Always.
Were as completely ephemeral as you know any given night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at these drawings, and for me, they conjure up that whole period.
Mm.
And they're great drawings on top of everything else of interesting-looking people. So it's, you know, she is very much a theater icon. Both of them were.
Clearly, yes.
And, you know, this is our season of icons. We've
That's
got
right.
a new book that is going to be out, coming out April 28th, called Hirschfeld's Icons. There's only 25 of them. And even 25 icons. Or 25 pages of icons because
Correct.
One page has four Beatles on them.
Sure, sure. Okay. There's 25 posters. It's a follow-up to our Hirschfeld Sondheim book.
USA Today bestseller.
That's right. And yes, there's 25 removable, ready-to-frame posters in the book of various Hirschfeld's icons. I like saying from Hemingway to Madonna because I feel like that really gives you the breadth of these icons.
Sure, sure. I like starting with Chaplin because I think he starts even earlier.
Earlier than Hemingway?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Do you think?
Chaplin, sure.
Mm, I guess so.
Hemingway
just
publishes...
So left, that's just so left field.
Hemingway
You're
publishes
right,
his first book in 1925.
Oh, 25. I'm
and Hirschfeld's in Paris and he buys it.
He's practically a spring chicken.
Yes.
Jeez. Well, I'm still sticking with Hemingway to Madonna because I like the how opposite they are.
Well, and that's what the great thing about the book is. It doesn't have just performers.
No, it's everybody.
We tried to find everybody. And look, people are going to say, why didn't you include this?
Yes, of course.
Dick Cavett wrote the introduction to the book. And he said, I hope this is volume one because there's so many other icons.
No, there's so many people that are not included that you could make a whole nother one and not even think about this one. You know, like it would stand on its own.
You could make two or three other ones and still feel like, what do you mean you didn't include this person?
Yeah, but it's got a bunch of people.
And we're not talking like, what do you mean you didn't include Steven Weber and Wings? No, these were real important, iconic figures in popular culture.
Yeah, yeah. We got a little bit of everything, including Lassie.
Lassie
gets her own page.
Yes. And as you've never seen Lassie before.
That's true.
The full Lassie.
Yep, this is a TV Guide cover of Lassie from, 57?
Yeah, 59. I think that's what sounds right.
And the TV, what was published by TV Guide is a cropped.
Head and shoulders.
Yeah. And barely shoulders, very small portion of the real drawing, which is huge, and which you will see in full in this.
For the first time ever.
Yep.
It's never been published.
Nope, never completely. Been published.
So for those of you with dogs on your mind.
That's right.
We've got something for you. We try to get a little bit of everybody in there.
I always fight for the dogs to get in the books.
Yes, that's right. Catherine is gone to the dogs.
Yep, always. So that's our new book. You can pre-order on our website, alhirschfeldfoundationshop.org. We also have a few different special bundles where you can get a t-shirt, a limited edition t-shirt, and the book. We have a music, a stage, a film, TV?
TV.
And a dance. Do we have a dance? Or no, Dick Cavett.
So, dance or Dick Cavett.
Yeah, no, dance it's or Dick Cavett. Cavett, same thing. So those are on our shop as well.
And those are only available to order up till April 7th.
But the book is fully available for pre-order. And those will ship on April 28th.
And those will be signed copies.
Yes, they'll be signed by David Leopold himself.
Only place you can get them.
That's right.
Unless you stop me in the street. Yes, I will sign it then.
Well, thank you for joining us. I had a pleasure talking about Julie Harris. Go to the online exhibition so you can see all of the drawings large. You can look for that Liza in the Mademoiselle Colombe drawing.
You can zoom in on any drawing. New Yorker says this is one of the few opportunities where a digital show is better than a real life show because you can blow up the drawings to find all the needles.
That's what it's all about.
Literally, that was in the New Yorker, folks. I'm not making that up. So go to our website, alhirschfeldfoundation.org, click on the exhibitions tag, and you will go right to the Julie Harris Show.
Follow us on all of our social medias or anything that you use. Facebook, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, Instagram, X, Blue Sky, TikTok, Al Hirschfeld. Our YouTube channel, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, has many different videos that our media director, Doug, makes for things like Elizabeth Taylor's birthday.
Love that.
Or trailers starring Ken Burns for our online exhibitions.
Love that.
But it also has the visual companion for this episode, which is so in our show notes in the podcast, usually you have to click on, the pieces that we're talking about so you can see them. But in this visual companion, you can just let the YouTube play and tune in as you need to. Doug will put up the images on the screen. So it's really, really nice.
Great
job. So definitely check that out. And then, of course, our online shops, alhirschfeldfoundationshop.org. That's where you'll find a lot of our merch and hand-signed limited edition lithographs and etchings for you to hang in your home beautifully. And we have hirschfeldhomestyle.com, which has everything from shower curtains to
pillows.
Yes, I have a lovely Columbo pillow. I have a beautiful Selznick. I have so much Selznick merch. I have a Selznick Distributing Corporation pouch that I keep cash in, as well as a very, very warm Sherpa blanket with the Selznick distributed brochure. It's on my couch right now. My dogs love it. I love it. It is actually a very nice blanket. Yes. I need to get another design because the Selznick one is a little funny. But Hirschfeld Homestyle, that's where you'll find all that kind of cool, different merch that we have there.
And if you feel so inclined, you can rate and review us on any podcast platform.
Please, it helps other people find the podcast. So that's really helpful.
And it does help our self-esteem.
Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time.
We'll see you when we do.